Today we continue in our study of Mishnayos Maseches Gittin with lesson number 15, and we will be finishing the fourth perek today. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, we'll be learning the eighth and ninth Mishnayos of the fourth perek. Perek Dalet, Mishnah Ches, and Mishnah Tes. Mishnah Ches, Hamotzi es ishto mishum ailonis. An islandess is a woman who has not fully developed her feminine genitalia, her feminine physical characteristics, and therefore cannot conceive, cannot have children. Certainly in the time of the Gemara and even much later, this was impossible to determine for certain except by a general observation, with no special medical tests, hormonal tests, etc. So this man assumed that his wife was an ailoness. The word ailoness derives from the word ayil, which is a male sheep, meaning she looks very masculine. So amotzi es ishto mishum ailoness. A person who divorced his wife because he felt that she could not have children. She was an islandess. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo yachazir. Rabbi Yehuda says that he cannot take her back after he divorces her. And here, Rabbi Yehuda is choshesh mishum kilkula. Here, Rabbi Yehuda has the same concern that the Chachamim had in the previous Mishnah. Namely, he will divorce her, and if he can't take her back after the divorce, what might happen is that he divorces her, she remarries another person, she has children, and then he comes along and says, oh, had I known that she could have conceived, I wouldn't have divorced her. And the whole divorce is now null and void, and she's still married to me and not to the second guy. And any children she had from the second fellow are mamzerim, are illegitimate. This is a big kilkul. Therefore, we tell him, look, buddy, if you're divorcing her and your reason is because you feel she's an islandess, no matter what happens in the future, you can't take her back. This get is final. So holds Rabbi Yehuda when he says, lo yachzir. The Chachamim, however, disagree, and they say, yachzir. They say that he can't take her back, and we're not concerned that he might say, well, the get I gave her was under a false assumption, mistaken assumption, that she was really an islandess and couldn't have children, but had I known that she could have children, I wouldn't have divorced her, blah, 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 blah. Can't say that. Why? The Gemara explains that these Chachomim hold from the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds, kol tanai, she'eno ketanai b'nei godu b'nei ru'uvein eno tanai. And when anyone makes a condition, when any act or legal transaction, including a divorce, is subject to a contingency, to a tanai, if this, then this, if not, then that, then it has to be specified like it was specified when the children of God, the children of Reuven, made a promise to Moshe. And they said that we will take the land of the Gilad as our heritage. If we do go with you across the Yarden to the west and help conquer the land, then we will receive the land of Gilad. And if we do not go with you, then we forfeit our rights to the Gilad and we will take our land in the true west bank of the Yarden. Now, in this Mishnah, when the husband divorced her because she was an islandess, he did not say, I'm divorcing you. If it turns out that you're not an islandess, then the get is not in effect. But if you indeed are an islandess, then the get is in effect. He didn't say anything like that. He didn't say anything like that. He never said that if you're not an islandess, if it turns out that you were not an islandess, then the get is off. But rather, he gave her a get, period. The condition was not, if yes, then this, if not, then that. So therefore, the get is a get, and he can never say later, had I known. So there's no problem of kilkul haget, and therefore he can take her back if he divorces her and she does not yet remarry. Niseis la'acher. Suppose this woman who was divorced from her first husband because he thought she could not have children, and she went and married a second fellow, and she indeed did have children from the second husband. Now, she wants to go back to the first husband and say, you owe me the money for the ksuva. Because when the first husband divorced her, under the assumption that she was an islandess, he did not have to give her the ksuva. Because the Mishnah says in Maseches Ksuvos, her islandess ain lo ksuva. A woman who's an islandess is not titled to the money in the ksuva, money promised her in the ksuva, if she becomes divorced or widowed from her husband. The reason being, because the marriage was done under false pretenses. He married a girl thinking she's a normal girl and she can have children. Lo hikirbo. He did not diagnose her. She was not diagnosed. He did not know that she was an islandess. So therefore, if he chooses to divorce her because she turned out to be an islandess, she's not entitled to a ksuva. But now, after her second marriage, she obviously is not an islandess. She has healthy, normal children. She gave birth normally. So now she comes back to the first husband and said, you see, the marriage to you, Mr. First Husband, was not under false pretenses, because I indeed, obviously, am not an islandess, and therefore you owe me the ksuva from the first marriage, which you terminated by divorcing me. Now, in some ways, she's entitled to that, but Rabbi Yehuda says, Om Rabbi Yehuda, Om Rimla, we counsel her, Sheti kusich yafalich midiburich. Better be quiet and not claim the ksuva than be outspoken and claim the ksuva. And the reason is, if she is quiet and just forfeits the ksuva from the first husband, the ksuva money from the first husband, then the husband will say, oh, if I would have known that you're not an islandess and I would have to give you money for the ksuva, I never would have divorced you. I only divorced you because I thought, hey, you're an islandess. I don't have to give you the ksuva. Not going to cost me much to divorce you, so you're divorced. And therefore, by claiming that she is not an islandess and claiming the money from the ksuva, she is, in a sense, ruining her own position. And so we counsel her, don't claim it. The Mishnah continues, Mishnah Tetz. Hamocher es atzmo v'es bonov l'goy. Person is desperate, a Jewish person, can't make a living, decides to take himself and his children and sell himself and his children to a goy as slaves. So normally it's a big mitzvah to redeem those slaves, Jewish slaves, and get them back into the Jewish fold, not have them enslaved to a goy. However, the Mishnah says, Ein podin oso. We do not redeem them because we're concerned this person will go and do it again. Anytime he's broke, he's going to go and sell himself as a slave, knowing that the Jewish community will redeem him. The Gemara says that this Mishnah is speaking of a third strike, when it's the third time he sold himself and his kids into slavery. But the first time, the second time, it is still a mitzvah for the community, Jewish community, to redeem them from slavery. But this fellow did it the third time, then we say, no more, buddy, we're not going to redeem you. However, if the fellow dies, pod avol, pod dines habonim la'achar misas avihem. Once the fellow dies, we do redeem the poor children, Nebuch. We don't want these children to become assimilated into the Gentile community, and therefore we do redeem them, but only after the father's death. If the father's alive, we don't redeem them because we're concerned he's just going to sell them all over again. The Mishnah continues, Hamocher esodehu legoy. If a person sells his field in Eretz Yisrael to a goy, so he, the owner of the field, sold it to a goy, field in Israel, in land of Israel. and a second to a goy. Now the goy has it. Along comes a second Jew and buys it from the goy. So halokeach mevi bikurim. The person who buys the field, the second Jew in the picture, he does have the duty and the right to bring bikurim, first fruits, from the field to Yerushalayim, etc. Even though the fruits grew and ripened in the property of the goy, nevertheless, the lokeach must bring bikurim. And the reason is, mipnei tikun ha'olam. This is for the benefit of the community, the benefit of the world, the benefit of society. The Gemara explains that there was a fascinating historical process here. And there were really two takanos at two different times in Jewish history. Because as far as the Torah is concerned, a person, a Jewish person, who buys a field in Israel from a goy must bring bikurim, because we rule ein kinyan la'akum be'eretz Yisrael la'hafkia kedushas eretz Yisrael. The ownership of the goy does not co-opt, does not remove the sanctity of the land. The land remains sacred with reference to being obligated in Truma and Maser and Bikurim, even when it is in the possession of the goy. So therefore, Midin Torah, of course, I sold my field in Eretz Yisrael to a goy. You, Shimon, went and bought my field. You have to bring Bikurim. The goy's ownership in the transitory phase between my ownership and your ownership, the goy's ownership was not mafkia, did not co-opt, did not remove the kedusha, the sanctity of the land. But the Chachamim saw, this is Takana number one coming up, that many, many people sold their fields to goyim because they knew, what's the problem? I'm selling my field to a goy. The land remains sacred, so I'm not doing anything so bad. I'm selling to a goy. Now a goy owns it, but it's still sacred land. So therefore, the Chachamim in Takana number one made a Takana that the Lokeach, the person who buys it, Mr. Shimon in our example, from the goy, should not bring Bikurim, so that everyone should know that by selling it to a goy, you are in a certain way diminishing its sanctity, its Kedusha. And therefore, since I know that once I sell the field to a goy, the person who buys it from him will not be bringing bikurim from it. So I see that my selling it to the goy somehow diminished the kedusha of the land. Oh, I better not sell it. That was takana number one. However, the Chachamim then saw that there were people who, for financial reasons, were pressured. They had to sell their field to raise some cash. And therefore, they sold the field to the goyim. And the fields remain by the goyim. Because since people thought, look, if I buy it from the goy, I'm not going to have to bring bikurim. So obviously, the land is now in the hands of the goy. It's farfallen. It's goyish land. It's no longer holy land. And therefore, no one was going to redeem that land. So the Chachamim made a second takona number two, reverting back to the true Din Torah. And the Din Torah is that if you buy a land in Eretz Yisrael from a goy, the fact that the goy owned it does not preempt the obligation for bikurim. Because ein kinyan la'akum be'eretz Yisrael. The goy does not acquire the right la'hafkia, to remove the kedusha from the land. And so we revert to the Din Torah. In this way, people will be encouraged to redeem the land from the goyim, and the land will remain under Jewish ownership and Jewish control. That's the generally accepted understanding of this Mishnah. However, there is another girsa here in the Mishnah, which reads not hamocher esodehu legoy v'chazar ulekocha mimeno Yisrael halokeach mevi bikurim, as we just read it, but rather Hamocher sodehu legoyim, if a person sells his field in Eretz Yisrael to Gentiles, lokeach umevi bikurim, he is enjoined, he is instructed, buy it back, buddy, and bring the bikurim. Meaning, every year that I sold this field to the goy, this field in Eretz Yisrael to a goy, every year I must go knock on the guy's door and say, I have to go and buy from you the first fruits because I'm obligated to bring Bikurim from this land and bring it to Yerushalayim. In this way, I will not so easily sell land to a guy because I'm going to know that I'm going to have to do everything I can to buy back that land and maybe even every year go and purchase the Bikurim, the first fruits of the land. So therefore, I will be discouraged from selling it in the first place, and the land will remain under the control of the Jewish people. We see from this Mishnah, without getting too political, how vitally important it is from the point of view of Chazal, for purely halachic reasons, for Jews to own the land in Eretz Yisrael. The land in Eretz Yisrael has kedusha, has sanctity. Sanctity with reference to being obligated in Truma and Maser and Bikurim, etc. And to sell it to a goy means releasing it from Jewish ownership, and the Chachamim did various takonos to make sure that the Jew would buy it back from the goy, and the land would remain in the possession of the Jewish people. And so we have finished lesson number 15.